I'm going to start recording the meeting now, and then the chair will take over. If everyone else can mute your phones now, except for Commissioner Taylor.
Do you need a drink?
Wow.
Now you tell me.
Recording in progress.
What do you want? I got a Coke. I got a water.
Water.
Okay. So it's at 1:36. Time to start our meeting. I appreciate everybody that's on our meeting today at Zoom. We canceled the meeting in Cedar City because of the road conditions and whatnot. I want you to know that I was in peril on when we canceled those meetings. So anyway, I appreciate everybody taking the time to get on and to be with us at the Pike County AOG. And I appreciate the commissioners and members of this board for all that you do. I want to thank you. We have a great responsibility in that we need to serve the citizens of our area, and that's our number one priority. Now, having said that, I'm going to ask Commissioner Almquist, seeing how there's a flag by you, if you would lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, if we could do that right now.
Got one right here.
That one.
Yeah. I pledge allegiance to the flag.
You need to unmute.
Oh.
Sorry there, Commissioner.
Okay. All right.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner Almquist. That was a little different, but
some echo.
It's important to me that.
I had to stop because of the echo. Oh, I see.
Commissioner, you muted yourself. Oh, here I'm just babbling. Maybe somebody else muted me. I'm just babbling. I appreciate that. We need to review the minutes from the October 19th steering committee meeting. So has anyone had a chance to read those, review them? Anyone like to make a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve those minutes, Commissioner Hollingshead.
Okay.
I second that, Cousins. Paul Cousins.
Okay. Did you get that, Gary? If there's no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Commissioner, can we do a roll call vote?
Yeah, we probably just better.
If
you conduct that, Gary.
I would be happy to.
Okay.
So, Commissioner Taylor?
Aye.
Commissioner, let's see, Tyler Feld?
Aye.
Commissioner Cousins?
Aye.
Melanie?
Are we still unmuted?
Yeltbreaker Huff?
Yeah.
Because I need to say aye.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you.
He's on his phone, so.
Is he muted?
Yeah, let me find him here.
He's asking permission.
I gotta find him. I've got a long list here. I gotta find him here. Yeah, there we go. He can just wave if he wants to just, let me see if he's, I've got to find him on the picture here. There we go. Well, let me go past there for a sec. Wade, Hollingshead?
Aye.
Almquist?
Aye.
And Billings?
Aye.
Yeah. Okay, and were you able to unmute there, Bill?
I don't see Dell.
I don't.
Must be more list.
Well, we can come back and I can add his vote later if he gets on here with audio.
Okay.
But it passed.
We got a lot of people.
Passed. EG first public hearing for applications by FCAOG. Okay? I am going to declare this public hearing open. Gary, would you like to review this?
This will be done by Cody Christensen.
Cody Christensen. Sorry, Cody.
That's okay. Can you hear me okay?
Can.
Okay, I'm just going to be real brief. The purpose of the public hearing is to provide citizens with pertinent information about the Community Development Block Grant Program and to allow discussion of possible applications for the 2023 funding cycle that's coming up. The grant money must be spent on projects benefiting primarily low and moderate income persons. The Fife County ELG region is expected to receive approximately $907,269 in the new program year. All eligible activities that can be accomplished under this program are identified in the CDBG application policies and procedures manual. You can review that anytime. We passed that out at the How to Apply workshops to most of the entities, and most of those were represented at that workshop. Examples of certain activities include construction of public works, facilities, water and sewer lines, fire stations, acquisition of real property, provisions of public services such as food banks or homeless shelters. In the past, the Fife County ELG has received funds for general administration of the program and for planning with a consolidated plan. Any questions or any input on CDBG program at this time?
Okay. Congratulations on your
If there is anybody online for the public hearing, just unmute and ask questions, make any suggestions or recommendations.
76%, I guess.
Yeah, we've opened it up to the public. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns.
I'll rub it in.
Right?
I'll rub it in.
That's what happens.
Do we have any, Gary?
Nope, nobody's.
Okay, then. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing, and we'll move on then. Okay, you good with that?
Sounds great. Thanks, Cody.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Cody. We're going to turn some time over now to Johnny Miller, and he's going to do our annual board training, open meetings training. Johnny, it's you.
Thank you, Jay.
You betcha.
It's probably your fourth or fifth time.
All right. We're going to do the Open and Public Meetings Act and the Ethics Act training this morning. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. I'm sure all of you have already had some open public meetings training from one of the other agencies that you work with. So I'm going to highlight the items that are different for an interlocal agency, such as Fife County, than they are for either the city council or the county commission or the school board, because there are differences in the act between those types of agencies. So, Gary, if you want to bring up the...
You bet. And so just if somebody like Commissioner Taylor, if you can tell me you're seeing the PowerPoint when I share this here, then I'll advance it as it goes.
I can see the Open Public Meetings Act.
Perfect.
All right. Great. All right, Gary, go ahead. Next slide. So the first question we're faced with is whether or not any particular meeting is subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act. And again, we've reviewed this in the past, that the big issue is to make sure that, first of all, you're talking about a public body that's meeting, and then the actual meeting that is taking place meets the definition of meeting in the statute. So with the important
body.
Part there is we know that the executive committee and the steering committee of an interlocal, both of you would be considered a public body, and that's why you conduct your meetings. The question with public body would be with
the other committees that you might create, either ad hoc committees, short-term committees, or standing committees, whether or not they are subject to the Open Public Meetings Act. And again, you'd look at whether or not those that committee is created through legislation or an ordinance,
we have to
and whether they directly spend money, which generally does not happen. Most of your committees would be advisory, would be the highest level of authority that you would give them is to actually provide recommendations to the board. Many agencies will have their committees be not be advisory, but simply be providing reports to the governing body, and that way those meetings would not have to be subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act because they are not advisory. They are simply providing information through a report, not a recommendation. So Gary, and Brian, if you want to review the committees that Five County has to determine and make a determination of whether or not they are required to meet the act or not, I can review those with you. The important issue with meeting again is that meeting is defined as when a meeting is actually convened by the proper person with a quorum of the public body to discuss, receive comments about, or act on matters for which the public body has jurisdiction and advisory power. So meetings where you are simply all attending another meeting that you did not convene, say one of the congressional members has a meeting that they want people to attend to get information, and you attend that meeting, even though there's a quorum of you present, that would not be require you to have an open and public meeting.
It's probably like when the lieutenant governor sends somebody down.
And meeting does not mean a chance social gathering as well. All meetings of public bodies must be open to the public except portions of a meeting that are closed sessions, and we'll speak to that in a minute.
Spending any money.
Go ahead to the next slide, Gary.
You need to buy this machine.
Any meeting where business of the entity is acted upon must be open to the public. That includes a workshop or an executive session in which a quorum is present.
All your counting. Go.
However, if the workshop is strictly administrative, then it's not subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act. So if you are simply receiving reports from staff and leave it at that and have no discussion over what you will do with that information that staff provides you in that work session, then that meeting would not be subject to the Open and Public Meetings Act because it is strictly administrative.
Who cares?
Go on to the next slide. So I created this list of the things that the statute requires.
Yeah.
All public bodies to have in place before they actually hold a meeting. First of all public bodies must have their own rules of order and procedure that identify how you operate your meetings, how you govern your meetings.
You
must have those rules of order available at each meeting for the public to inspect and provide them on your public website. That's why I generally recommend that agencies that say that they follow Robert's Rules of Order, I've yet in 30 years to see a government agency that actually uses Robert's Rules of Order. They use a loose interpretation of Robert's Rules of Order, but it would be very difficult for you to put Robert's Rules of Order on your website because they're trademarked and copyrighted. Again, you'd have to have the 700-page book at every open meeting for the public to inspect. So that's another thing. We've written rules of order and procedure for our board of directors. So if you need any assistance to review and update your rules of order and procedure for your entity, I can help you with that.
To allow.
You must notice all regular meetings, your regular meeting schedule at the beginning of the year. And then you must also post an agenda for each meeting individually and make sure that that's done 24 hours in advance of the meeting. You must identify each item that will be deliberated or acted upon, each agenda item, with reasonable specificity. And I know reviewing the agendas of Five County, you do a good job of that. It's clear the public would understand what each item, what it is that you're going to be discussing. You must include the documents provided to the public body for the meeting. The state website where you put your notice allows for you to put all those documents there as well. Because again, especially for an electronic meeting like today, generally if you were meeting in person, the packet of materials that's given to the body must be available for the public to review. So by placing all of those items on the public notice website, they have them in case you have an emergency like today and have it hold the meeting electronically.
300.
If you do hold electronic meetings, you must have a resolution rule or ordinance to allow for electronic meetings. And as of the last legislative session, your resolution or rule that allows you to have an electronic meeting must also include how you determine a quorum, whether or not people that are attending electronically are counted towards the quorum or not. Gary, you can move on to the next slide. As you conduct meetings, understand that the statute requires that the public must be able to observe the meeting through accommodations at an anchor location.
Public does not a right.
Or you open it up to the public holding an electronic meeting. The statute
does
for open public meeting says the public may observe the meeting. A public hearing is where the public has the right to participate in the meeting. So the public does not have the right to speak at a meeting, but the chair, and again, through your rules of order and procedure, generally the chair is allowed to make the decision of whether or not they are going to allow the public to comment or discuss items on the agenda or not on the agenda.
Johnny?
Yes.
The organization that's meeting, calls the meeting, can also set the rules by which the public may speak, right?
Yes.
They could set a geographical, like, you must be part of that city, resident, or you can't, once you mention someone's name, you know, they can set their own rules as to how that public comment period can go.
Right, because again, as of now, they don't have a right to speak. So through your rules, order, and procedure, you could limit the chair's authority to allow people to speak by writing those types of rules, Commissioner.
Thank you. Okay.
You may remove a person from a meeting if they are willfully disrupting the meeting to the extent that orderly conduct is seriously compromised. That is the rule. And unfortunately, that's had to happen in a lot of public body meetings as of late. So if you think that you are in that position, hopefully you will have your entity attorney available for you to determine whether or not they feel that that the issue has risen to this level
the county?
Remove them from the meeting.
Got close.
Gary, move forward. And here are the reasons that you may close a session of an open meeting. The first one, to discuss character, professional competence, or physical mental health of an individual. And I always remind people that lots of people call this the personnel exception. It is not an exception to discuss personnel. You may be discussing a personnel issue of an individual discussing their professional competence or physical mental health. All too often I see agencies that, because they refer to it as the personnel exception, they're talking about COLA increases and merit increases for entire departments and things of that sort, and you cannot be doing those things in closed session. So just be careful with when you are closing the meeting for that purpose. And the others are all listed there. I think that generally, if you're going to close a meeting, you generally review that with your agency attorney make sure that the reason is permitted. And just remember that any action that results from discussion in a closed meeting in violation of the act is that action can be nullified or voided, and you'd have to go back and redo that meeting again in public. Hey, Gary? When you are conducting a closed session, you first have to start by conducting a properly noticed open public meeting. You cannot hold a closed meeting separate from an open meeting. You have to be in open meeting first. Then the body that's meeting has to have a two-thirds of the body has to vote to hold the closed session. You have to identify the specific reason for the closed session, one of those eight that we just showed, both on the recording and in the minutes. You cannot take a vote in a closed session or make any other action, although they did amend the statute last session that you can take a motion to end the closed session and return to the open meeting. That is the one action that you can take in
that
a closed session.
Some rookie representative.
You must record all closed sections. Taking minutes of the closed session is optional, but you must record them unless it is discussion of security or professional either security devices or professional or competence, physical mental health of an individual. For those two, you wouldn't have to record them. If you don't, then whoever chairs that closed meeting must sign an affidavit saying that that is all you discussed in that closed session. And remember that closing a meeting knowingly in violation of this section is a Class D misdemeanor. The minutes of a meeting, minutes must be taken for all public meetings, must include the date, time, place, members present and absent, substance of all matters discussed, and comments from the public. So if you do allow the public to meet or to provide comments, you must show the substance of all of their comments in your minutes. You can use an online version of minutes with links to place on a recording where the matter is discussed. I'm not aware of any agencies that take advantage of that, but it is allowed. Minutes must include all public materials distributed at the meeting. The minutes of an interlocal agency must show a roll call for all non-unanimous votes. And here's one difference between the rule for an interlocal agency like Five County than it is for a county commission, a city council, or a district school board. Those entities must take a roll call for every vote. For an interlocal agency, you only have to take a roll when the vote is not unanimous. And the other quirk with the showing the roll of the votes is that that section of the statute now says that the you must show that the person voted for, against, or was absent. Those are the only three options that are provided in the statute for how a person votes. There is no abstention vote allowed under the OTMA, so you cannot abstain from a vote. If you really want to abstain from a vote, get up and leave the meeting so that you're counted absent. But that can't be shown in the record. But that could be a part of your rules of order and procedure. If somebody votes in abstention, that you could put in your rules of order and procedure that that will be recorded in the minutes as a no vote or an absent vote. You must have draft minutes available within a reasonable period of time, and you must make approved minutes available within 3 days of their approval. Next, Gary. Public meetings must be recorded. The recordings must be complete and unedited. They must properly be labeled and identified with the date, time, and place of the meeting on the recording. And all recordings now, as of a couple sessions ago, must be made available to the public within 3 days of the meeting. You must have those recordings ready. So that is the Open and Public Meetings Act. Questions? If not, we'll move on to the Public Officers and Employees Ethics Act. And again, this is a little different. than what you would receive. Those of you that work with cities, you review the Municipal Ethics Act. Those of you in counties review the County Disclosure Act. Because Platte County is an interlocal, you are like other state agencies and are under this Ethics Act. So it is a little bit different than either the county or the Municipal Ethics Act. The Ethics Act prohibits unethical use of your position, so you cannot use or attempt to use your position to substantially further your personal economic interests
or others,
or secure any special privilege or exemption for yourself or others through your office.
You
also may not accept employment that might impair your independence of judgment or employment that would interfere with the ethical performance of your public duties. You may not have personal investments in any business entity which will create a substantial conflict between your private interests and your public duties. And under the statute of investment is more than a $2,000 investment in an entity. One of the other prohibitions under the Ethics Act is you may not accept employment or engage in a business activity that requires you to disclose or use controlled information gained by your official position. So if Platte County has records that are not public, you cannot use those records, get those records through your position on the Platte County Board to for another job or other business activity. You also cannot disclose any of that protected information acquired by your official position to substantially further any personal economic interest or secure any special privilege or exemption at all. So if you need records that Platte County has, fill out a grammar request just like any member of the public would.
Mm-hmm.
Acceptance of a gift or compensation or loan is also prohibited under the Act, so you may not knowingly receive, accept, take, seek, or solicit directly or indirectly for yourself or another a gift of substantial value or substantial economic benefit that would tend to improperly influence a reasonable person to depart from the person's faithful and impartial discharge of their public duties. So the gift would have to actually, a reasonable person would have to believe that that would have you change the way that you would vote because you received that gift. Or that a reasonable person would know or should know is primarily for the purpose of rewarding you for an official action taken. So just beware of that. If you recently have or are now or will in the near future be taking action directly affecting the donor, also, you should not be taking gifts from someone in that position. As you know, a gift is any non-pecuniary item less than $50. So non-pecuniary means you can't take cash and you can't take gift cards. Gift cards are considered cash by the state, so you shouldn't be taking those at all. Also, you may not require a donation or payment for service. So as a body, you cannot demand a person to donate personal property, money, or services to the agency as a condition of granting any application or request for a permit or approval or other authorization. They can only do those things if it's expressly required by statute, ordinance, or agency rule, or if it's mutually agreed upon between the applicant and the agency, or it's made voluntarily by the applicant, or it's part of a judgment in the courts. It's also unlawful for the person to offer a donation for granting an application or permit with the same exceptions made. The things that you are not prohibited from, but you must disclose, is if you receive compensation for assisting a person in a transaction with the agency. So somebody's paying you to help get a permit through Platte County. You must disclose that.
For $2,000.
Does not mean that you cannot vote on those issues. or anything of that sort, but you must disclose it. If you're an officer, director, agent, employee, or owner of a substantial interest in a business that is subject to regulation by the agency, you must disclose that.
I can't remember.
If you're an officer, director, agent, or employee, or owner of a substantial interest of a business that conducts a transaction with the agency for which you will receive compensation. So you're a salesperson for a firm that is selling something to Five County, you need to disclose that. Complaints or violations of the chapter are filed with the Political Subdivisions Ethics Review Committee unless there is a local ethics committee that's been created, and then the state Political Subdivisions Ethics Committee cannot hear it. It must go to the local ethics committee for review. And there I would just recommend that seeing the state Political Subdivisions Ethics Review Committee in action and their apparent disregard for what the statute says they can and cannot investigate and make comment about, I would highly recommend that you consider creating a local ethics committee to hear your ethics complaints. You shall be dismissed from employment or office if you knowingly and intentionally violate the ethics laws. You can also be charged with Class D misdemeanor to a felony of the second degree for certain violations of the chapter. And if you've violated the chapter, the agency can rescind or void any contract that was entered into in respect to a violation of the chapter without returning any part of the consideration the agency has received under that contract. So pretty hefty penalties for violations of the Ethics Act. Questions? Thank you for your time.
One question, Johnny, real quick. What was the deal with that person in the school district up in one of the smaller counties? Certainly not one of ours. But they were paid $2,000 to help write a grant for the school or something, and they were an employee of the district. Do you know about that? That was just on the news 2 days ago.
No, I didn't see that story.
It may not affect us. It might be a school district issue, but it goes along with what you just trained us on.
Yeah, so if they didn't disclose that they may be compensated for assisting their employer was doing business with the agency, if they didn't disclose that, someone could file a complaint and they would have to undergo investigation by the Ethics Committee.
Okay. Thank you.
And again, the statute, some things you have to disclose in writing in your conflict disclosure in January. Other things you are to disclose when you discuss them, that issue, and as a body. I suggest you just do both to make sure that you got your bases covered. Disclose it in your conflict of interest form, and then when the issue comes up, remind everybody, hey, remember folks, my family owns this business that's regulated by Five County, and so I just want to be sure everybody's aware of that again before we have this discussion.
We don't have bonding, taxing, or regulatory authority.
Johnny, I'm glad you said that. What does regulated mean? I mean, how tightly or loosely is that interpreted?
Well, say your family owns the local cafe regulated by the county health department. So you would have to disclose that you have an interest in that entity or that agency or entity that is regulated by the entity that you sit on the body or the board of. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm just wondering, like Five County, I mean, probably half the people on this call have some sort of business. You know what I'm saying? A health department on a restaurant's pretty clear, but, you know, Five County, you know, I don't know what, you know what I'm saying? Maybe that's just a question for attorney, I don't know.
Yeah, when in doubt, I'd say disclose. That's always the best advice.
I agree.
Mr. Biden rule.
Anything else for Johnny? As always, Johnny, we appreciate you. Appreciate your training. And we look forward to see you about January or February here so we can do it again. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay. Thank you. If there's no other questions, we'll move along.
Yeah.
To shape Utah's future visioning, do we have Laura Hansen? Is she with us today?
Actually, Tara Anderson with the Governor's Office of Planning and Budget, and I'm here for Laura today.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Great.
We're going to turn some time over to you then.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to share my screen, and and make sure I get in the slideshow view. I'm just going to zip through this so that hopefully we have some time to hear from you too. This is intended to be a listening tour, and we want to be able to get your opinion and your input on growth in our area. So let me just start again with my name, Tara Anderson, with the Governor's Office of Planning and Budget. I'm here today with our project partners. We're partnering with all 7 AOGs, with Envision Utah, the Gardner Policy Institute, and the Utah Land Use Institute. It's for this project, Guiding Our Growth. It's funded by the legislature. It's a 16-month project to talk about growth issues throughout the state. And we all know there's a lot to celebrate about living in Utah. It's a great place to live. I've lived here. I was born here. I enjoy raising my family here and the great growth opportunities and job opportunities that are here. Utah is one of the fastest growing states in the nation. In fact, we were the fastest growing state in the nation in the last decade. And you can see that we're projected to grow even more. This is both from natural increase, because we have kids, they have big families, and we like that. And then also because Utah is a great state and other people want to join us. Sometimes when we see a lot of growth challenges and growth pains in our areas, we start talking about, can we stop it? Could we build a wall around Utah? Could we keep everyone out and just have some, things here showing that that's just not possible. Our choices for existing residents would be to decrease the birth rate or lower our life expectancy. Neither one of those sounds like a great option to me. If we want to have new residents not want to come in, they are drawn to our strong economy and Utah's natural beauty, and many of them coming from other states find Utah very affordable, and we don't want to mess with any of those things either. And you can see that growth varies across the state. There are parts of the state that say, we would love to have more growth. And then there's parts of the state that are having some real challenges because of all the growth in the area.
I mean, Beaver will lose too.
Growth does bring a lot of benefits. It brings low employment, entrepreneurship. It brings jobs and diversity, more businesses. It really enriches our lives in a lot of ways, but it also brings challenges like water issues, transportation congestion, more crowds in our recreation areas, and housing issues, and those are real challenges. So we're not pro-growth or anti-growth, but we want to guide the growth, and we want to be in the driver's seat. We want to be growth realists, because it's not a question of if we grow, but how we grow. And so why we wanted to be part of your meeting today and to listen to you is to find out more from you, your leaders in the area. We want to know more about how we can, as a state, talk about growth solutions and implement them. We need these proactive strategies to help maintain what's great about Utah. But we want to make sure that we protect the water resources, that we want to ensure that there's housing availability and affordability. We want to make sure we deal with transportation solutions and maintain the identity of our communities and our open space. So So with this, these are the goals of our project. We want to educate Utahns on the facts of growth decisions. Most issues, solving them, solutions, it comes down to education. We want to encourage our communities to support quality growth principles and promote the great plans we already have in place. We don't need to reinvent the wheel, and we know there's not a one-size-fits-all solution, but we want to build on what's been done before. Our main end goal is to generate a list of big moves and guidance for decision makers, strategies and policy levers that we can play on and promote and then be able to implement. This, we don't want to be a plan that sits on the shelf, but we want to be something that gets implemented and used. Our time might be limited today, so we do want you to use your networks to promote our new website, and there's a survey on there where you can join the conversation, and we hope that you'll be able to promote this survey with your networks and help others share their opinions on how we can best prioritize growth strategies. This is our timeline. We're working in three phases from now until fall 2023. And like I said, we're partnering. It's a big effort with lots of partners, and we're happy to have you on board. We want to hear from you. We're here to listen and to learn from you about growth in your area. So after that, I'm going to let Ryan Beck from Envision Utah go ahead and take over.
All right. Thank you, Tara. Mallory, did you have a few slides you wanted from the Kemsey Gardner Institute that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I do. So let me try to share my screen. See how this goes. All right. Are you seeing that, Ryan?
Yeah, I can.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm Mallory Bateman. I am the Director of Demographic Research over at the Kemsey Gardner Policy Institute. And I just want to give you a couple data points to kind of help frame the conversation, help you think about that potential growth in the area. So this is just looking back to 1940 up to 2020 using the decennial census counts for the counties in Fife County. And you can see, obviously, you're well aware of your communities and the changes over time, but just kind of some different growth experiences or population change experiences for decades, but especially starting in the 90s, some pretty intense growth obviously happening in Washington County, also Iron County, and Keene having a little bit more in recent years as well. This is just looking with 2010 to 2020, just the changes overall, and so a little bit of a zoom in on that change throughout the decade. The number on the end indicates the 2020 census population, and in the green area is the 2010 population. That brown area is the additional residents between 2010 and 2020. So if we look at 2021, you can see here, so the purples indicate growth and the oranges indicate decline. And this is basically to highlight that the growth that we're experiencing in Utah and the Intermountain West in general is a little bit unique nationally, especially due to COVID-19 having some increasing numbers of deaths than what would be kind of expected, decreasing births overall, and then international migration really kind of slowed down significantly in the past 5 or 6 years. Nationwide, our growth really small between 2020 and 2021. In this period, we were second fastest behind Idaho, so we're not always number one, but we're still up there. We increased by 1.7%. So when we zoom into the county level, this is that same data set at the county level. You can just get another slice of the picture. You can see in your region, the darker greens now indicate growth and the purples indicate decline. So you can see all of your area increase in that year change. And then we just highlighted the percentage change overall. Thinking about that 1.7% statewide, you all have a lot of growth going on in that five-county region. So all of this kind of back look helps inform how we think about moving forward. This is the state level, so this is kind of those levers of our population change that Tara mentioned. So the net migration, that gray area, if it's above that zero, that means more people moved in than out. And you can see since the 1990s, statewide, that's what, you know, that has become more and more consistent. Natural increase, that's the birth and the death. So birth minus death, if it's above that zero line, that means more babies are being born than people are passing away. And then the black line is those two added together, which equals the total population change. When we zoom in to Five County, you can see the impact of that pretty intense migration in the 90s, especially in Washington County. But that is, you know, a pretty significant driver of these more rapid changes you've all been experiencing for the past couple decades.
I'll make sure we get this.
As we look forward, so this is using our long-term population projections. We do get to revisit these every 4 years, 5 years. So when we get new inputs, we can update that. But we think due to kind of the age overall, the deaths are going to be increasing. you only kind of get one pass out towards the end. And so deaths are going to increase over time. Just overall, statewide, we're seeing fewer births. And so we're going to see that in the region as well, which is going to make that natural increase a pretty small part of the population change. But we anticipate in our model is a demographic and economic model. So we anticipate continued economic change, growth, diversification that's going to bring people to the state. Also, in your region, Washington County does get a good chunk of our retirement migration consideration. So that's part of it as well.
Just holding on.
The migration kind of being a driver of the growth into the future. So that kind of results in some different population age. So this is these are population pyramids. So the bottom is babies, and then each bar represents a year of age going up to our oldest at the top. And then the male population is in gray. The red is the female population. And you can see the shifts over time. In 2020, you have a little bit bigger base. That means the younger population, you can see kind of below, I don't know, age 20, a good chunk, and then it narrows a little bit as you get towards the top, with a little bit larger in kind of those early retirement ages. As we move into 2040, that shape changes a bit. As the population ages, we have fewer births, kind of a narrowing of that base. And then in 2060, we're going to continue to have that migration. People move for jobs, so that's like the large working age population kind of in the middle. The large retirement age population at the top, that's also millennials aging, being up at the top of that population pyramid toward that end, and then the narrower base. So just something to think about with those population changes, there's changes to the age and who your population is. Overall, as I mentioned, we have the economic component and the demographic component, and we anticipate continued economic growth in the five-county region. Washington County and Iron County kind of being the bigger drivers in this, continuing into the future, but just an overall shift and increase of about 130,000 jobs throughout the whole region. And then population-wise, adding an additional 330,000 residents, more than doubling. So I know that's kind of a pain point, but you can see a lot of it being in Washington County. All of this, again, we get to revisit these every 4 or 5 years. When we get new inputs, we get new birth data, we get new death data, we get new insights into the economy. And so if we get new insights or those insights change, that changes what that future looks like. This is the first year that we've produced these scenarios at the county levels. And all of this is on our website at gardner.utica.edu. I'm happy to share all of this with you all as well. But, you know, the decisions we make now, the assumptions we put into the model change what that future might look like. And so kind of with that framing of potential growth into the future, the decisions that you make, can really make an impact on what that future looks like. Yeah. I will turn it back over to Ryan.
That's why you build a county building to.
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate that, Mallory and Tara. Tara and Mallory, thanks for setting the table for this conversation.
Yeah.
Before I get rolling, Gary, am I correct in thinking that this meeting should end this meeting about 3 o'clock? Is that appropriate?
Don't ask Gary. Ask us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mallory.
All right. I'm just running the meeting. It's Brian's meeting, so I'll let Brian.
Commissioner's meeting.
All right, Brian. 3 o'clock, is that our drop dead? Is that our cut time, Brian?
Yes.
Okay.
When you're talking,
I will do my best to be respectful.
When you're talking demographics, you can't say drop dead.
Oh, yes.
It's the
not
rule.
Not a good joke. All right. Well, let me introduce myself. My name is Ryan Beck with Envision Utah. I'm also here with Jenilyn Toxstein and Jason Brown, also with Envision Utah. And, you know, our job with this Guiding Our Growth conversation is to engage stakeholders and the public, and that's exactly what we hope to do, is to get this group talking. Just so everyone's aware on the call, you know, we have been doing our best to get all around the state. You know, Tara and Mallory and this Envision crew, oh man, we have been to Weber and Box Elder and Richfield and Monticello and Price and Provo and a few other places I'm forgetting, Washington County. You know, tomorrow night we're back to Salt Lake County. Next week we're in Ridge County up by Bear Lake. So we're doing our best to really get a lot of voices in on this. And so we appreciate, Brian, we really appreciate you gathering the group and getting us this time on your agenda. All right, with that, I'm going to try to do my best to make technology work here, so bear with me for a second.
I'm playing on the name.
And
it's way cold.
Let's see.
In the middle of summer on the hottest
hopefully you all can see. Hopefully you all can see my screen.
You're okay.
So,
it's cold.
Great, I'm getting the nod. So, back to technology. Please, how often do you, when you're getting a presentation, does someone say grab their phone? Well, please grab your phone, and you can see that QR code on the screen. Please go ahead and scan that. That'll take you to Slido, so we can all share our opinions and voices at the same time. So if you're not on a phone or if you don't have a phone handy, you can always go to slido.com, and you can enter the number you see there on the screen. So please join us here. We'll get started. I'll give you just a minute to get started, and then let's talk. Hey, Jenilyn and Jason.
Yeah.
I normally have two screens. I'm not going to be able to see the audience very well. So would you just help me with seeing who puts their hands up, etc. So, and please. All right. So with that. Let's jump right in here. So, let's see. Is everyone, hopefully everyone's able to join us here. So the first question is pretty straightforward, and it's a word cloud. This will produce a word cloud that we can all see. But the question is, what do you love most about Utah or your community that you want to preserve? What is it that you love about where you're at? So please take a moment, type in your answers, and then I'll probably ask for some participation to explain what you said. Seeing lots of things about this is pretty cool software, so you can see what people are typing in. And let me you are allowed to type in more than one answer. Please don't load up the deck by any means if they're unique answers, just so we can get a true sense of what people are thinking. All right, with that, small town charm and natural resources. How can I ignore that? They're obviously getting some play here. Would love for someone, don't be shy, don't be an introvert now. What's someone who can speak to small town charm?
I said small town charm on there. I'm Nanette Billings, and just the fact that we have good people in our community, and it just makes so you know your neighbors. I think it's important that most of the people, when they walk outside or they need something, they can find people to be there for them. So we're all there to assist one another and help each other.
Appreciate the answer, Nanette. What a great answer, and I think that's probably one of the main reasons why this group chooses to live in more rural areas, more small towns. You know, we heard the same thing in Monticello, in Price, but so love the answers. Someone who talked about the natural resources would love to hear your thoughts, what you're thinking about natural resources.
I tried to put one in.
Please don't be afraid to just jump right in here.
This is Jen Wakeland out in Beaver County. I'm from Utah County, but moved to Beaver recently for this position. And I love that on any given day, I can go out and put my paddleboard in the lake or a reservoir. And then in the afternoon, I can take my Jeep out on the trails and play out in the mountains. I have the best of all the kinds of outdoor fun that I can do.
They'll know it's me.
I appreciate the comments, Jen. We've been hearing that all over the state, this love of the outdoors and love of great and easy access to the outdoors. So definitely something that we will be, handing on to the governor's office and those decision makers so we can preserve and protect that. Thanks for the answer, Jen. Does anyone want to speak to, I know natural resources are an important part of the economy here. Would love for someone to speak to natural resources. It's something that's unique to the more rural areas. You know, we talked to a lot of people on the Wasatch Front. This is not what they're concerned about. So would love to hear about it.
It's naturally ugly up there. There's beautiful spots, but I think so.
This is Nana. I didn't write natural resources, but we at least acknowledge that we're part of this world. And even though we're not trying to stop all of the, coal and all the natural resources that we have in our community, we recognize that they are a blessing to our community, and that as we are wise with how we develop them, that it can be a blessing for our entire, not just state, but our country. And Utah's covered natural resources. So they are a blessing economically if we do use them correctly.
Appreciate the thoughts, Nanette. In some of the other small towns we've spoken to, there was a lot of concern about either state or federal regulation being handed down. Does anyone want to speak to that? No takers on this one?
Well, I'll take that. This is Barbara Bruno, the mayor of Springdale.
Yeah, of course you are.
And I wrote down view sheds, but certainly natural resource, and there are different definitions of that. I'm from Price, so I understand what Nanette's saying about the value of natural resources, but I think our natural resource that we want to preserve is Zion National Park. And we don't want it loved to death so that we lose what we have there. But one of the things that's threatening us, and we are not a growth community, but one of the things that's threatening us is the state mandating certain building ordinances are really taking away our right to regulate locally. So we'd like to see that stop. We want to stay the unique community that we are.
Thank you, Mayor. Great comments. Appreciate the comments. Okay. Here's one that always piques my curiosity. Someone wrote in Heritage, Southern Utah is unique. I think I know what it means. My family's from Tangwidge and then from Richfield. But Heritage, whoever wrote Heritage, would someone speak to what they're thinking about the Heritage, and that's what they want to preserve?
I wrote that one. I was just referring to our traditions, the things that we do each year. I'm in Hurricane, so Peach Days is a big thing, same with our county fairs. And then, of course, the exhibits and those types of things. And so those are celebrations of our heritage, what we've done, and remembering where we've come from, even though if our community's been, grounded in an extraction economy, we still maintain that even as we grow into, say, becoming a tech center.
All right, Paul, thank you. Great comments. And then I see another version of this Native American culture. You know, this is something that is unique to this part of the state. Dallin, I don't want to call you out, but I did meet you earlier. I don't know if you wrote that or not, but if that's something you wanted to speak to, or if others on the phone wanted to speak to that, would love to hear about it.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. I work for several of the Native American tribes in southern Utah, primarily Chippewa Band of Paiutes,
could be
just
more
in Ivins, yeah. Utah, outside of Santa Clara, in Washington County. And they have a rich history that is, and amazing traditions, artifacts, beautiful land, and also businesses that are operating that can be supported by several of the counties. There's the Kanosh Band of Paiute, the Cedar Band of Paiute, and even the Kaibab on the far east end of southern Utah. So I just am glad to be able to remind everyone about the Native American culture that is a big part of southern Utah, and I'm happy to help you all connect with the tribes and work with them. As a tribal member myself, I'm happy to help you all understand how to just be good neighbors with each other, and the tribal leaders are also open to cooperate and learn and just work together on all these various issues.
With nation.
Yeah.
Appreciate the comments, Dallin. Thank you. Thank you for chiming in here. That is that is great to hear. Okay. This is I have about 6 questions total here, so I'm going to move on. Looking at my time, I'm going to move on to the next question. It's kind of the, in my opinion, the heart of this conversation. But would love to hear, thinking about your community, maybe think out into the future, maybe 20 years or further. But what are the greatest challenges in your community over the next 20 years? water, water, state government, okay. Jobs, housing, and water. All right, I can't ignore water. Let's start there. Let's start with the water issue. We've been hearing it all over the state, but I think every AOG maybe has a little bit different concerns with water. So for Five County, let's what are your water issues? What are your water concerns? I can see. Let's see. I've got 8 people who have put it in, so would love 9 people. So please, someone who's a water expert or knows their way around here, please explain.
The lack of water, for one. That's a struggle for us in rural Utah. So each community needs to develop water, have water for growth. I know I'm from Escalante. We struggle with our reservoirs running out every year. It hurts our farmers and ranchers locally. And so something needs to be done. I know we're working with the governor's office right now. While our water is low, our reservoirs are low, we should be cleaning them out and preparing them for when we do get another snowpack and whatnot. So water is a big concern. You have to have water. If you don't have water in rural Utah, you don't have anything.
Agreed, Commissioner. Let me ask a follow-up question about, and anyone's welcome to chime in, but the funding for, you said you're from Escalante, which is a fairly small, you know, population-wise, fairly, how do you go about funding the new infrastructure that you may need for water infrastructure? We'd love to know about the funding of that.
Well, right now we are working with the governor's office and FLTCO. We're trying to come up with the money to start. We want to start in one spot with one reservoir right near Escalante. We want to be able to get it cleaned out and or build a new reservoir that is so needed within our area. And so we have to work with the state legislature, with the governor's office, to be able to come up with that funding. It's a big deal. It's also all the regulations and everything. It's going to be hard to overcome to be able to do all this work. Back in the day when Utah was settled, our ancestors came in here, and the first thing they did was started to build waterways, and so that they could take care of their farms and raise food for their cattle and be able to build for their families. Today, it's hard. It's hard to build a reservoir. It's hard to clean out waterways because of all the regulations. But it's going to be so important because over time, our reservoirs fill with silt and sediment.
Yep.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for the detail. Dan, it looks like you got your hand up.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, with drought and water with growth, we're talking about supply issue, right? There's another aspect of this, and that's water rights. In three of the valleys down here, the state engineer is doing a groundwater management plan in Parowan Valley. We're going through that right now. And basically, the state engineer has allowed to people to essentially they've over appropriated the water rights for the available water, and so now we're in these situations where we have an aquifer problem, and there's a lot of money. When we talk about funding, there's a lot of money being provided for metering and conservation, which is all good, but when it comes to water rights, the state has one tool, and that is to just curtail use of water rights. Well, that throws markets into chaos. It turns farmer against farmer. It turns communities into, it's a real difficult thing. And what I wonder is if the state can develop maybe some other resources, even a mechanism to buy back old, new or young water shares, water rights, that we don't have to throw the markets as much into chaos, because I'm sure they're going to continue to go valley by valley that's been over-appropriated. And they point to the code and say, this is all the code allows us to do, but if we could take some of the money that's being thrown, ARPA money or whatever it is that the state is throwing at some of these water projects, and actually come up with some more creative solutions to work through our water rights over appropriation, we don't have to cause so much chaos in the markets, because chaos in the markets means winners and losers, inefficiencies, and it's just, there could be a better way to do it. And anyways, that's just something I'll throw out there.
Appreciate the comments. Creative solutions for over appropriation. Really appreciate the comments there, Dan. Okay, I can also see that housing is coming to the top of the list. Someone please speak towards housing. Can maybe tell me what community you're from and tell me what's going on with the housing situation in your community.
This is Commissioner Hollington in Beaver County. Obviously, I think the housing situation is pretty much the same across the state. We're having a lot of move-ins, and then from Southern California and Vegas, which have increased the cost of housing in this area. So people who want to move back here trying to buy affordable housing is almost impossible. Well, it has been, after COVID. So they bought up all the houses, and then the prices are really high. So now people can't really afford to do that. And so there really is very limited housing for people to move back here who have, they just have jobs that were just like, entry-level jobs and trying to start families, and there's just no place for these people to live. Some are traveling a lot of distances, and it's a challenge in the small communities to be able to build housing, affordable housing, I guess, not just low-income housing, but affordable housing is the key, I think, for most rural Utah.
Thank you.
I'll speak to that, too. So this is, again, Barbara Bruno, the mayor of Springdale. We have a serious housing issue here that's a little different. We have a population of less than 600 full-time residents, but we have about 1,200 to 1,500 people who work here every day. That includes employees at Zion National Park, and there is nowhere for them to work. So our businesses are understaffed, and they're not open their usual hours. So people accept jobs and then rescind because they can't find anywhere to live. So The one of the things contributing to that we're trying to get our arms around is the conversion of long-term housing into nightly rentals, which of course are much more lucrative. So again, that's one of the issues that we hope the state will let us handle in whatever way we need to maintain some of our long-term housing.
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks for the unique perspective from your town. Appreciate that.
Can I add one more comment on housing? This is Kendrick Walton from Utah Tech University. Just speaking as a large employer in the community, we're really struggling to attract talent to the university as a result of the housing crisis. Costs have just escalated so greatly that we'll get a really talented pool of candidates, of applicants that come to the community, want to be here, want to be part of the university and the community, but simply can't make the move because they can't afford the housing or the salary that is being offered. So we're really in search of innovative solutions. There's a lot of exciting things going on, split equity models, land trusts, creative financing and zoning opportunities, but we can definitely use the help of all levels of government in that conversation.
Appreciate the comments, Henry. So it sounds like the recruiting is getting very difficult to fill in the jobs because the housing situation is tough. All right. I'm going to shift gears a little bit looking at my clock here. I see a couple of answers that have piqued my interest personally. Public land. Someone spoke to public land. That's obviously a huge percentage of the land in southern Utah. Please, someone speak to what the concerns around public lands.
I believe that I put that down there. Public lands, Garfield County is, if you're from Panguitch, your family's from Panguitch, you know that Garfield County is the size of Connecticut. We are 3.3 million acres, of which 93% of that is federally owned. And we get tilt payments for that, which adds up to about 34, maybe 38 cents an acre, which is not much. And yet we get somewhere between 2 and 4 million visitors a year that have impacts on our roads, our emergency services, EMS, everything. It's a struggle for us to be able to survive with that. Even garbage on public lands, we have places for them to come and to put their garbage, they do. And then we're overwhelmed as a county and a community to be able to take care of all that. So public lands is a big deal. We love public lands. We do. But it's a struggle, especially to operate on 34 cents an acre.
Commissioner, follow-up question. You mentioned garbage and some other concerns. I know obviously a lot of people come out and ride their off-road vehicles, their side-by-sides or whatnot, ATVs. Emergency services, is that one of your concerns, funding the emergency services for all these tourists that, come and use the lands? And
absolutely. Our search and rescue sometimes is overwhelmed. We're all volunteers. Even our EMTs, and we get called out sometimes once, twice, three times a week during the summer, early spring, late fall. Somebody's lost, somebody's hurt. And that's a big deal. It takes away, we have to leave our jobs, we have to leave our homes to go out and take care of all the visitors and stuff that come to our area. And so we get pilt here again, which is 38 cents an acre.
Here you go.
Thank you for the clarification. All right, does anyone else want to chime in on public lands?
Commissioner Almquist, yes.
Yeah.
Not that CITLA hasn't been helpful in development in our five county areas, especially Washington County, but they need to relook at the mandate and goals of CITLA because they're very restrictive sometimes, and they, that highest and best use also means highest and best dollar, but we're lucky we have CITLA lands. Some of them are completely isolated and worthless to us economically. Those need to be traded for federal lands that are right up on our borders. And Congressman Stewart would love to have Utah make the first move and try to make that a more lucrative way to free up some of that CITLA land in our own borders, but also to trade them off for parcels that are completely surrounded by BLM or Forest Service that will never be developed.
All right, appreciate the comment, the CITLA land comments, lots of some specific concerns there. taking note of that. Okay. Let's see here. Does someone want to speak to government overreach? I see that on the screen here. Lots of concerns. We've traveled around, you know, in the Grand County, around the Monticello, Moab, other places that have high percentage of public lands. But does someone want to speak to whoever typed in government overreach?
I will. Okay. Well, that was me too. Okay.
All right.
The feds tell the states what to do, and the states tell us what to do. And I know that's more of a legislative thing, but often bills come out of the governor's office, bills come out of various departments, bills come out of the newly organized health organization from the state. You know, don't do to us what the feds do to the state. We know a lot about what we need and how to deal with it. But don't tell Paiute County, for example, that they need to have an affordable housing plan. You know, that who's going to write that? You know, there's how do they even have a county government and then feel like it's going to be, you know, pushed around with a limited population? Yeah, we can write one in Washington County, but we also have 76% of our land in the feds, the rest in private. The county itself, our affordable housing plan isn't going to say that you can have a six-story high-rise apartment in Vail. You know, there's no water, there's no sewer capacity, and, you know, it's just illogical to have counties necessarily have affordable housing plans. And so we don't want Salt Lake County and others saying, we do it, you have to do it. That's what I mean by overreach. You know, we're not rebels, we're not trying to go against the law, but often that bulk of legislators from northern Utah hammer on us to do things that they do that are really either not a problem or that we've already handled.
All right. I really appreciate those the comments. Yeah, I think the premise that locals know best what for their own area goes a long ways. Thank you for the comments.
Okay.
All right. We have a few more questions here. So I'm going to move on to this next question, which is just a multiple choice. It's pretty straightforward. How do you feel about the rate of growth in your community? Is it too fast? Is it about right? Is it too slow? Or what growth? Please, please share your answers.
Yeah, like some of the smaller counties are going to be what growth?
Yeah.
All right. No one's saying too slow. That doesn't surprise me.
What growth?
So I'm gonna someone who said, you know, we're growing about right in my community. Maybe identify your community and tell me why you're thinking about right. Or conversely, if someone doesn't want to speak about right, maybe too fast or what growth? Please, someone tell me what's going on with your community and the rate of growth. Are you able to manage it? Is it too slow?
This is Anna Billings, and we're in Hurricane. So our community is, you can call it, I'm not going to say too fast, but I'm going to say you can't grow faster than you can put in infrastructure and have just the normal requirements. But I will say that it is growing a lot. And so there's always growing pains with a community that is 54 square miles, the third biggest city in Utah, and we're only 22-24% developed. But I am going to say with the too fast and about right is that we have good people that have moved here. We've got good people in place to make sort of the regulations and also the personal rights to build are there. So people can develop, and it's making it so that it's working. But is it hard? Yes. We've got a lot. There's so many things. I don't know what you can say other than it's people's rights to develop. But we want to make it so regulations aren't so crazy that they can't, but so that it's in a good way that we're not going to put the infrastructure in and then have to tear it back out to put in more power lines. making sure that we've got connections with our corridors, our Ringletide, have a fire station in a specific area in the community. Those kind of things, and it's just kind of visionarily looking at something. That's what I'm about, right?
Water out to a
thank you, Nanette. Thank you for the perspective. All right, maybe someone who's from a smaller community that said, what growth? What growth? Well, love to hear your perspective about your perspective on growth and why you might want growth. Any takers on that question?
Well, Springdale again. We are, as you know, a small community, and we are aging out, so to speak. What we would like to have, we'd like to have growth. We'd like to have young people and families. And we've got an elementary school that has fewer than 50 students in it. Most of those are coming in with their parents from other areas. So we would like to have growth. We would like a more diverse community.
Thank you, Mayor.
We have plenty of visitors. We'd like to have more residents, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And those visitors need to
learn. Gotcha. Okay. Thank you for the perspective.
Contribute to the
okay. I have 4 minutes left, so I'm going to jump to the next question here. So there's obviously the state as a whole is growing rapidly, looking to almost double our population by 2055, 2060. How do you think the rate of growth in the rest of Utah will affect your community? This is an open text, question.
Effect? It's
Mayor Bruno, I have a feeling you might have some comments on this one, just in your position.
I think that's what I'll do.
Put effect, yeah.
But I'll give folks a moment to type their answers in. Whoever put, we are running short on time, so I'm going to take this. Increase taxes for schools. Explain what you're thinking, what your thought is there.
Well, again, it's Mayor Bruno in Springdale. We don't have kids, but we're funding the growth in Washington County through our property taxes for schools, and we don't have a problem with that, but it will probably increase taxes.
All of Sun River.
Thank you. All right. So I'm seeing a lot come up on the screen about increase in visitors. I assume, there'll be an increase of traffic. The congestion will be greater. We talked about emergency services. We talked about garbage. Okay. With that, I don't mean to shortchange this. I just want to stay on time. So would love to know. So when Tara started this presentation, she spoke to what are the big policy moves or what are the big investments that we can make as a state to help manage and deal with the growth we're going to see? So I would love to know what your big ideas are. What can we do to take advantage of the opportunities and address the challenges? So looking for big ideas, now's your chance to let us know. I can see I have 7 people typing, but nothing's appearing on the screen yet, so I will be patient. All right. Stay grounded to the people, listen to them. And the other comments about collaborative conversations with all stakeholders. Infrastructure. Okay, so I'm going to ask a quick follow-up on infrastructure. Are we talking transportation infrastructure, water infrastructure, broadband, all of the above?
This is Commissioner Holling said, yeah, basically all of the above. I mean, broadband, especially in rural Utah, is a big deal. You can't really expand and get those businesses to come to our community if you don't have broadband. And so, I mean, you know, a lot of people working from home now, so that's a big deal, which is great. But if you don't have the broadband to do that, then it's a struggle.
Thank you for the comments. Okay. It appears that I have 1 minute left, and I have 1 question left, so I hope I'm not shortchanging this for anyone. But I am going to, final question. I've tried to ask these ask questions a whole bunch of different directions. Some of them probably felt similar. But if I didn't ask the question in the right way, or if you have other thoughts or concerns that we should address, Now's your chance. Now's your chance in the last before we close up here. So would love to either you can either type it in or please speak up if so desired. All right. Well, we will keep this poll open so folks can continue to type. But while you're typing, I will just finish up here. Tara showed this slide earlier. We now through the spring, we are going to be out listening to as many communities as we can to get input. And next spring, we will put together probably 4 to 5 scenarios that we can test some of these big ideas that we're hearing around, test some of these investments, test some of these policies, policy shifts that could be made to help manage our growth. We're going to take those scenarios to the public. So thank you for being a stakeholder group and helping us a focus group and helping us come up with these ideas. So we will probably come back to you. Brian, we'll probably have you send out the survey link through your networks. So please share it with all of your networks so we can get as many Utahns' voices in as possible. And then fall of 23, about a year from now, we want to have this project finalized and know what strategies and big investments and big moves we need to focus on. And again, I know people always say, hey, we do not want a plan that just gathers dust on the shelves. And that is truly, we don't want that either. We'll consider, if that happens, we'll think of this as a failure. So with that, if there's no more questions or comments, who do I turn it back over to? Commissioner, is it back to you?
Yeah, I think that's back to me. And Ryan, we appreciate your time in this presentation. We appreciate Mallory and Tara, appreciate you guys coming. And I would encourage you to get out to more communities. Come to Garfield County. Come to each county within the 5-county region. And I know you've been to Washington. I don't know about Iron County yet, but I'm sure that this is important to all of our communities.
Were you up at
Thank
CC
you.
Tech?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Happy to be here.
Yeah.
Okay. And do we have any other questions for Ryan and presenters? Are we ready to move along?
What'd she do?
She's with Sunrise.
Okay. Not hearing anything. I guess everybody's muted. We're going to move along Community Development Services. Glade Nielsen and Karen Peterson, are they with us today, Gary?
I am here. Glade wasn't able to make it, so you get me today.
Okay, we're happy to have you.
Okay, awesome. I'm not sure, Gary, you want to share my slides? Perfect. Okay, so I just had asked for a few minutes on your agenda today. We recently presented to 6 County, the 6 County ARG, and they suggested we come down and speak with you as well. So I'm with Sunrise Engineering. My name is Karen Peterson. I'm the Community Development Director. And so probably all of you are familiar with Sunrise Engineering. We have our office in Washington County. Joe Phillips has done a lot of work with his crew down there. And just in the last 6 to 8 months, we have added community development and planning services. If you want to go to the next slide. So we have a team that's all across the state, including down in the 5-county region. We just spent a long time, an hour and a half, talking about all of the challenges that come with growth and all the challenges that your communities are facing. And my message is always, don't let them happen to you. Like, figure out how you want to navigate those. And we know that that's incredibly difficult for communities, especially when you have small communities. We talked about affordable housing plans and PIU and these requirements that come down. So we just want to make sure that you know we're here and that we can help you with these kind of services. And we even have people in your local community that can do that. If you want to go to the next slide. So one of the opportunities I want to hit on right away is the technical planning assistance from UDOT, because this is open right now for applications. So technical planning assistance is, you can use this funding for your general plan, you can use it to update your zoning, you can use it to think about your transportation master plan.
Travel, right?
There's lots of ways you can utilize this funding. It has a pretty small match, the requirement's only 6.7%. And if you would like to file an application and you have any questions, we can help you walk through what an application might look like, what your needs might be, and how those applications are scored. So we can talk to you a little bit about how you might want to put your application in. So I want to make sure you are all aware of this. One of the things with the state being really invested and interested in planning right now is there are some financial resources for communities that haven't always existed. And so we're trying to make sure we have a good list of those opportunities so you can let us know what your needs are, and we can try and help you find some grant funding to make some of these things happen for your community. So if you have any questions about that, the applications are open now. I'll have my contact information here at the end. Feel free to call me about TPA. So these are the things we're providing to communities, general plans, area plans. We recently hired an economic development planner. So if you have questions about, we have this piece of property, we want to know what the best use would be in our community, we can help with those types of things. If you want to talk about financing options like tax increment financing, those types of things, we can help with that. You know, we've been helping you with master plans for years, especially on water, transportation. We can continue that. Those affordable housing plans that are required, especially if you're over 1,000 people in your town, we can help you with those, land use ordinances, subdivision ordinances, any of those kind of functions that you would like some assistance on, we would be happy to provide that. And I think maybe one last slide with my, these are some of the projects that we're doing right now, and some of them are down in your area. So we just finished the Leeds General Plan and the Apple Valley.
Tokerville General Plan.
We worked on Orderville. We're doing Tokerville's General Plan Annexation Policy Map. These are projects that we're doing right now that might be something similar to that, what you need. And some of these are being funded from the TPA from last year. So they were able to, you know, use those fundings to stack into getting something done. And then I think the last slide is just my contact information. So thanks for letting me have a few minutes. I know, especially when you sit through a conversation about growth and the challenges, it sometimes can feel a little bit like overwhelming and not quite sure what you want to do next. So this is my contact information. I'll also send out an email to all of you with my contact. You can just reply if that's easier. And we appreciate you having taking the time today. I really had hoped to come down in person, and I was actually on my way when I got the message that the meeting was moved to Zoom. So I'm going to try and come down and meet you all in person pretty soon here. So, but in the meantime, I wanted you to know we're here. So thank you.
Thanks, Karen. And tell Glade I said hello.
Hey, I will definitely do it. Maybe when we come next time, you can come with me.
All right, that sounds good. You want it? Yeah, maybe St. George in January, February, somewhere in there when it's nice.
Yeah, sounds like great.
Okay, appreciate it. Anybody have any questions or concerns at this point? If not, I want to move this meeting along. We're going to go to congressional staff updates. Who do we have, Gary? You want to line them up? And who do we still have with us?
Let's just let them jump in, whoever talks first.
I'm here. I can start off. I don't know if you all heard, but there was an election last night, apparently.
Yes. And we're
okay.
happy. I'm happy.
Yeah, so you're going to have to put up with me for the next little while. Senator Lee won, so you're not going to have Evan McMullen, Southern Utah Director. You're going to be stuck with Senator Lee, Southern Utah Director, so I apologize for that. But I'm looking forward to continuing to work with you all. The Senate is back in session, and they will be through at least December 16th. They've got to figure out a way to fund the government. So we're going to have a lame duck session, and that can always be a little bit dangerous.
Yeah.
Senator Lee advised against it, but he was overruled. So the Senate will be back in session until at least December 16th, or until they can come to an agreement on a spending package. We're still waiting on the results for three Senate elections, and depending on the outcome of those, Senator Lee may or may not be the chairman of the Judiciary Antitrust Subcommittee, the Joint Economic Committee. And really the agenda moving forward for the next couple of years will be determined on the outcome of those three Senate elections. So we're just waiting patiently on those results. And that's all I've got, unless there's any questions.
Would you tell Senator Lee congratulations, and we appreciate him. Any other questions for Heath? Okay. Who else would like to jump in next? Who do we have with us?
Hey, Kyle's here.
Hey, Kyle.
How are you guys?
Good.
Good, good. So, yeah, we went back to work, and we are scrupulously watching the development of the packages going to fund the government, hoping and praying and trying to prevent some wastefulness there. But otherwise, not much has happened in the 10 days since I last reported. I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy to be a resource for everybody should we need it. Don't hesitate to give me a call.
Thank you. Any questions for Kyle?
No.
That's an easy day for you, Kyle.
It is. Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you. Okay.
I'll jump in. Cindy. Great. from Congressman Stewart's office.
Hey, Cindy.
Hey, guys. We are thrilled with the results from Utah. That happened yesterday. As Heath and Kyle said, we're kind of waiting for some other results to come in, but we're thrilled with the state results in Utah, some of the locals, but we won't even go there. Anyway, we are not in session, so it's kind of a slow week for us, and we'll be back in session next week, and I will have more report at that time.
Right. Thanks, Cindy. Any questions for Cindy? Somebody come up with something. I guess not. Thank you, Cindy. Tell
Congressman Stewart we are thrilled.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Congressman Lee, absolutely. We're thrilled they're there. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Thank
thanks.
You.
That's all right.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. Do we have anybody else, Gary, with?
I think that's all your congressional updates there.
Okay, let's go to state agencies. Who do we have?
I don't see David Busk on there. He was invited, so.
Okay. All right, we'll make him report twice next time. Let's go to university updates.
Jeff Mather has his hand up. Or is that your hand?
Well, that's your hand.
I know Henry was here.
I'm happy to jump in. I was waiting for your cue, but...
Oh, no, go ahead. How are you, Henry?
I'm well. Thanks for having me. Just a couple of quick things to note on Utah Tech University's radar. The first is one that I've discussed with you all before, the City Alliance Program. I apologize for those of you that aren't from Kane or Washington County, but this program is limited to those two counties because that's the service region of our institution. This is a program that allows municipalities to identify projects that they need help with that they don't have the resources or bandwidth to take on, and partner with the university to get those projects done. We've got faculty, staff, and students who are ready to engage in real-world problem-solving. And anyway, this is an exciting program. The application deadline to be a partner city for the coming 3 years is November 15th, which is next Tuesday. If you've got any questions or are interested in applying, go ahead and reach out to me. My email is Henry, henry.walton@utahtech.edu. The only other thing I'll mention just briefly is we continue to make progress on the 183-acre plot of land that the state helped us purchase south of town or near the southern border off Exit 2, in between Exit 2 and the airport. We're calling it the Desert Color Property. Southern campus for the university, and we're working on what we're calling an innovation district there. Many of you have been to Atwood Innovation Plaza. Think of this as Atwood Innovation Plaza on steroids. This would be a place for hands-on experimentation and would have all the resources that small and medium-sized businesses need to grow and accelerate. So if you're a startup working out of Atwood Innovation Plaza and you need more space to accelerate and grow your business, the Innovation District would be a good place to do that. What we're doing right now is working on preliminary master planning for that process. We've put together five subcommittees that are working on a variety of different aspects of that project, financing, partnerships, community relations, things like that. And they'll make recommendations to a master planning group that will come in later this summer and help us develop that property. If you're interested in getting involved in either the City Alliance program or the Innovation District project, please let me know. I won't repeat my email again, but happy to be here. Thanks for giving me just a moment of your time, and let me know if you've got any questions.
Any questions for Henry? Gosh, you guys are getting off easy today when it's not in person. Okay, thanks, Henry.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else from university? We have anybody from SUU?
Again, he was invited, but he's not showing up on the list here. But Commissioner, can I ask something of everyone that's on the line still? I should have asked this earlier. Not everyone shows their name on here. It shows like the city they're from. Could everyone that's on here currently, like City of Hilldale's on here, could you send an email to me at G Zabriskie, that's G Zabriskie at 5 County, that's spelled out in words, FIVECOUNTY .UTAH.GOV. So it's G Zabriskie at 5county.utah.gov. Could you give me your name so I can put you on the list of attendees for the meeting? That way I won't just put somebody from the City of Hilldale because I won't know who was on there. And there's others on here as well.
Okay. We probably should have this conversation maybe at the first of the meeting and,
for everybody
and got it squared around.
We'll send out an email, to the one that Nate sent out to all the ones that were invited to come to this one, asking them if you participated, please respond so that we can get your name on here. So we'll get it so that the minutes will reflect everyone that was here on this meeting for the Shaping Utah's Future.
Very good.
Right there. Jerry, Chair. We have university updates, but you know the university system also includes the 9 technical colleges, and I think they ought to be invited because if we're talking about collaboration with the university from Henry, as well as the school districts in promoting all sorts of varieties of jobs and technical education from all schools, all entities, that we ought to invite them if they want to have part in the discussion because they're growing like crazy, they're building houses, they're plumbing, you know, it's all part of our economic growth.
You know, Commissioner, that is a wonderful idea. Thanks for suggesting that. Brian, can you reach out to those technical colleges? And
yes, I could do that. That's a great suggestion.
Yep, I agree.
Thanks.
Okay, anybody else have anything? If not, do we have any local affairs discussion?
It did not snow down here.
Dang.
Yeah.
Next time, call me at 5 o'clock in the morning so I don't drive all the way to the theater.
You had training. I know you had.
Yeah. We'll send some random to you.
Okay, thanks, Tyler.
Okay, so we have no local affairs, Gary, anything, Brian?
No.
Okay. Does anybody have anything else before we adjourn?
Appreciate you all.
Appreciate you, and yes, we do appreciate everybody that stayed on here today. We've gone a little bit long, but we had a great presentation, great meeting. I just appreciate you all. So,
Commissioner, we actually had a bigger turnout than we've ever had. Of course, this was invited for that Shape Utah's Future Visioning, but we had 48 connections online, which is wonderful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We want people to get involved, so we appreciate it.
Snow. Doing that, right?
What's that?
We just need more snow so we keep canceling our meetings and doing Zoom, I guess.
Hey, yeah, I'm good with that, guys.
We need the snow and water.
Yep. Okay. We are adjourned. Thank you all.
Take care. Be safe.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Have a good day.
Well, it was nice to be with you,
actually. Yeah, it was nice to be with you. When you talked about Sitla, I...
That's your home ground.
No.
Well, I mean, you know about it. You know the difficulty.
Yeah, yeah, but I always have this map here.
Yeah.
And, so, we know all the blue checkerboards, right? This is Washington County.
Right, your piece is where...
We're right up here. And this is the thing, Commissioner, is that it's through our family history, we've always been told that the surveyor, it was such rugged country, they never finished putting these in here. So I've always had the question, how do we audit? Because how many of these
should have been
in there?